Welcome to Rare Mind Talks, a podcast exploring how artificial intelligence, data, and innovation are transforming healthcare, particularly in rare diseases. If you've heard about these terms before and found them too complex, you're in the right place. We'll simplify them and explain their potential impact, especially for rare diseases, but healthcare overall as well. My name is André Correia, and today it's my pleasure to talk to José Videira. José is the Chief Digital and Information Officer at Solvius, and he has been leading digital transformation in Europe, the US, and China in the pharmaceutical and biotech world, helping to bring AI and data-driven strategies to an industry that is both highly regulated and rapidly evolving. José, welcome to the show.
Thank you, André. Fantastic introduction. You made really a short introduction and to the point. Thank you very much. And it's a pleasure to be in this podcast and a privilege to help you to discuss these exciting topics that, for me, they are always in my heart.
Thanks very much, José. And feel no pressure. First episodes with a guest. So let's kick it off. And let's kick it off with, again, first question and looking at the bigger picture. So this is basically why AI and data matter for rare diseases, but also for healthcare. When it comes to healthcare, patients face sometimes long diagnosis journeys, sometimes limited treatment options, and this is not just in rare diseases. So how can, from your perspective, AI and data help bring faster and more effective solution to patients? So this is really the why, isn't it?
The important thing of AI is for sure a helper, a muscle that can make us to go faster, right? So we are using technology, and technology is faster than human blinking, right? So, and this is one of the things that is fantastic. And we need to get the support of these tools that they are being developed in the last years, to not say decades. We should use them to our beneficials because we need to find solutions to the problems we have today, right? So, I need to say that there is already a lot of companies on this area. I had some privilege to cross some companies that they help to bring medicines and tests with AI faster to the market. But it's still something that I believe that we have 80% still to explore and to benefit from this technology.
And I guess, José, in your role, you have to make lots of decisions in a very fast pace as well, right? You're saying that technology is coming very fast, but decision-making is also getting really fast these days. Do you feel that you have the right amount of data to actually make those decisions?
A lot of times we don't have all the data, right? So, but I'm an apologist of having a decision, even if it's a bad decision, that no decision, right?
Yes.
So, having a decision is always good too, because then you start analyzing the KPIs and the data from that point on, right? And then you said, oh, maybe I made a mistake, and you readjust. Not having decision, you don't solve the problem and you don't go nowhere. You stay in the vacuum. So, but one of the things I use for doing fast decisions is writing the problem statement. If you are able to write the problem statement, you already start to having like 50% of the solution built. At least you know your problem. And then you can start being empiric, then start solving and testing how you solve this problem, right? So for me, it's really important to understand really what is the problem, to have the problem statement, and then to build on that.
And to be very precise about the problem statement, isn't it? So that, coming back to the why are you actually using all this technology, and why are you looking into all the data to get to that part?
Sometimes not too very precise, but at least directional, right?
Yes.
So because if you want to be in the cutting edge and to experiment with artificial intelligence, sometimes you need to have a direction. Because everything is new in the market, everything, the tools, they are evolving every day. So, but at least if you start having a direction, is already important, right? So, how you want to use the tool.
And then do you find that, I mean, you are in an industry that is highly regulated. Do you find that gives you some guardrails to go with some of these decisions? Or do you find that actually it suffocates a little bit some of the decisions you have to make?
Yeah, that is a good question. And my QA's fellows, they will love it and they will hate it, right? So I always try to tackle the problem, not starting from the regulated, but start from the pilot, you know? And I think we should pilot always. And this will help you that the regulation comes after. So you should pilot test if it works, doesn't work, and then said, okay, this works. And then you go to the regulation. Of course, you don't bring to productive or so on, but then you bring to regulation. Okay, guys, we created this, we made these steps, this is working. Help us to make regulated or what is needed more. Usually it's what is needed more to ensure that we cover all the regulations. But yes, I got sometimes in beginnings of my career that I start looking to the regulation and I didn't start anything on the other side. So now I invert a little bit. I know that my QA fellows, they will become with gray hair and with stress, but I always try to involve them on the pilot too. So the regulation is not only in the end. They should come along together with you because it's a cutting edge technology and they need to see to all this is working, right? Because these technologies you bring to the healthcare system, sometimes they are not fully understandable, right? So, and we need to make them clear. And then this is why I involve the people in the beginning and as part of the project.
And that goes back to when you're saying that it's a fast-paced world that we are living in with all these technologies. Some of them are not even fully regulated, right? So some of them are still in emerging states at some point. And I think what you are describing there is leading change. And when we look into this, and you know, many clinicians, many researchers, they are still focusing on traditional methods. And AI, it's not a traditional method, or it's changing those traditional approaches these days. So, I mean, how do you help your stakeholders? You've talked about your QA fellows, but how do you help other stakeholders to kind of embark on this data and AI journey in healthcare?
So you need always to have a kind of a psychologist mindset too. You need to identify which kind of stakeholder you have and how they work. And I have similar challenges in the work, right? So not where I am today, but from the past. There is people, if you start talking, oh, we want to do this and so on, because they are more traditional. I don't want to stop that, doesn't work. There will be a roadblock. Or then if you know that this kind of profile, you start doing, right? And then you show. And then, oh, it becomes the one moment for them. Oh, this works like that. There is others that you bring immediately along because they are curious like you and said, oh, I want to be participating. I want to be a pioneer and so on. And then you bring these ones along. So you need always to assess the stakeholder you have and then how you go towards their expectations too. Because you cannot go in a negative way saying you will not be on board on the project, but then you need to see how we evolve and which kind of information then you share, right? So, of course, the best thing you should do always, even if you have a difficult stakeholder, is we are doing this. Here is the information. You can read it. If you need more explanations, come back to us. So you should not hide, but sometimes you need to bring the in the right format, the message.
And I mean, your experience, you have experience in large corps in the pharmaceutical environment. Do you feel that this approach is also the same towards patients? I mean, again, as a patient advocate for rare diseases, I know that innovation is always a bit of hope to bring new treatments. Is this how the other side of the corp world sees patients? And this is maybe a provocative question.
Necessity, I will reply to that too, right? So, no, from the companies that I have worked in the past or I interact even not being employer of them, everybody has the heart in the good place, right? And the things that I see is sometimes it's not a bet of the company to invest in that disease, right? And sometimes, and you know that too, is a frustration who has that disease that the company is not betting. But a lot of times what we see is we see smaller companies betting on more in the red diseases than the big companies. Right. So, and I think it's a place where you should support the small or the biotechs. I don't want to call her small companies because some of them, they have investments of millions too. Right. Yeah. So, but for me, it's more a kind of watch out them because they are developing. And if they reach high phases of the production of the medicine or the technology that support this, of course, then will come a big company will buy them, and then they will be spreading the good news across the world. But for me, I think it's easier for small companies and biotechs to bet in rare diseases, because then it's a bet and get stakeholders to invest, than to go to a big corporation and then asking for some millions, which they said, okay, this is pocket money and we will not invest. Because the decision is something that brings more return. But small biotechs, they are key on the process, and these are an ecosystem that we need to have to provoke the big ones too, right? So this is where I see the benefits to work with small companies and and to support them.
And that is something that I'm observing as well. And the optimistic side of me is maybe, you know, having this expectation and this hope that actually everyone comes together to resolve that problem. And, you know, very recently, so I'm in close touch with a ZTTK Foundation in the US, who, by starting raising some data, could enroll with a small, as you said, with maybe millions in investment, but a smaller biotech, and then bring some other players in the ecosystem to work together towards this treatment. So I see that this provocative that you talk about is actually bringing more parties to work together. And this is really nice to see happening.
And you will see the interesting part is the smaller ones, they will be coming together faster than a big one because, and this is going back to the regulation. When you are so big, you have so much regulation that you need to go through to share data, and smaller ones, they still have the same regulation, but that is easier. It's more entrepreneurial, right? So they can change data, they can share experience. If they don't breach any data agreement too, right? But they will be always more collaborative initially than, okay, I only do that if I get these approvals.
Absolutely. Right? And for to get those approvals and to do all this, we also need to be able to measure impact. And I think sometimes in these chain of why are we doing this, implementing and deploying technologies to solve problems, then the measuring impact is sometimes a little bit forgotten because we want to jump into the next thing. So we are hearing everyone saying AI is a game changer. But I mean, how do we actually measure those results? I mean, in your opinion?
So in my opinion, and in the way that I'm using AI and even bringing to the company where I am, is to solve problems. I try to not solve the elephant. I try to solve a slice of the elephant, right? So, and then it goes back to this principle we already shared in this conversation and others, that is the problem statement, right? So then I tried, okay, where AI can help us, right? So, for example, we want to be faster to market to deliver developments in the bioinformatics area. AI there can be a strong input to the company, right? So we start now testing things that we bring to the AI to help us, right? Of course, now we need to go through a regulation, how we share that and how we protect our AI that doesn't change the information outside. But we see if it's a normal program, right? So if you take in average, and this is average data. If you take an average that when you need to build a program in the bioinformatics, you get like 2 to 3 days doing the algorithm, and then you take 5 days. And then don't push me on the numbers because potentially they are not correct. And then it needs to be 5 days developing. And then with AI, you can do this in a couple of hours or one day end to end, right? The only thing then you need is a strong architect, a developer that can review, because AI is a learning tool, right? It learns with us too. So, and then we have this input from this senior architect that only review the code. And then let's suppose this goes from 7 days or 8 days to 2 days. It's a huge impact to deliver faster to the market, right? So this is the small things we can see already happening in the development area. And today, and even I said to my team, the developments we are having today and the times to deliver from January and then in December, I foresee that will be 40% faster. So let's see if it's true or not. But I can tell you then in December, oh, this went. This is a pilot we are having, right? So, but we see where then we are using technology for the bioinformatics to support our testing and so on to be faster and to give results faster to the patients.
And it's going to be a lot more interactive. I mean, we've been talking about Agile for ages and ages, right? But now it's, I think, where things are going to get faster, but also more a lot in sprints, right?
Yeah. That is a huge potential to everything to become faster with AI, right? So if you see these tests they do, that the AI is already on the level that they take 99% the medicine exams faster than a human, then you can see, right? So, and they are complex exams. So this is the kind of things where AI will push us even and push the society to get some speed. There is always watch out in which speed and safety you are driving, right? But they will be a huge impulse to move the things faster.
And when we look into the next, I was going to ask you for the next decade, but I think 10 years is this day is too long, right? So when you look into next 3, 4, 5 years, how do you see what you're referring to? How do you see that impact on the diagnosis, on the drug discovery, in on the patient care overall?
I will give you already a perspective. So if we see that ChatGPT was launched, I think it was November 2022, or end of November. Maybe let's put 1st of December, something like this. But I think it was end of November 2022. And where we are today, where we in our mindset, we already think, oh, ChatGPT is here for years. It's only 2 years. Or 3 years now with 2025. We'll do 3 years, end of the year. But you already see always the speed. So then you are telling me what will be the speed in 3 years or what will be the result in 3 years. I don't know. I have directional thoughts, right? So but I can see already they are helping and taking a lot of tasks from the back office, right? So whatever is meeting me in support in developing PowerPoints and these kind of things. So I believe this kind of thing will be easier. I believe that they will generate different jobs for us. So, and for me, one job is the developer, right? So the developer of today will not be the developer of tomorrow. Mm-hmm. There is some junior roles we see that put potentially they will not really exist in the next 3 years. You know, this junior consultant that we were used to have, right? So, and we were consultants to collect that and migrate and so on.
Exactly.
Now, I believe this will be a role for artificial intelligence. Today is already in a lot of companies this. They already are using AI for data cleansing and for data migration. So then I can tell you this role of junior will not exist. It will exist a junior, but will be a more powerful junior, right? So because it needs to be filling a gap that AI will not fulfill entirely.
It's going to be a different skill set that, you know, you're mentioning, like, looking back 25 years ago when I started my career as a junior consultant, for sure, it's not what's going to happen in the next, it's not happening now, and it's not going to happen in the next three years. It's going to be interesting to see the new jobs, new roles that are going to emerge with this. It's quite a challenging time, and there are some risks and challenges as well, right? When we talk about the AI, you've mentioned regulation. That do you have other risks that you keeps a place in your mind when looking at these topics, and when you kind of try to empower your teams, try to push forward with innovation in technology? What are the risks that come to mind that you try most to mitigate, more from a strategic perspective?
So I will tell you what I have in my open space forum. I have a sentence that says, "What are we forgetting?"
That's awesome.
Okay, so because we are doing as normal company and any normal job, we are doing so much things at same time that we are forgetting. So and we are afraid sometimes. We generate so much innovation, and we are afraid that someone comes then in the middle of all these efforts. It is wrong. You need to cut. You don't cannot do that. But this is always in the center of our discussions. So what are we forgetting? And every time we come together in our teams, this is one thing that we should ask on the project teams. What are we forgetting? And be always open to listen to the teams. Oh, we forgot this, or we didn't make that. Or sometimes, which is strange, that happens to nobody says anything, right? So then we are forgetting something collectively. But the important thing is using innovation, there is a lot of learnings, right? So, and the failures, it's what we will learn for, right? So, and this is the important. There is a YouTube guy I follow that just now I forgot the name, but I can look to this. That he says an interesting thing is people says always, "Oh, you are so lucky to have this finding. Oh, you were so lucky to have this project. Oh, it's so successful," and so on. But they never said how many hours he was without sleeping to achieve that, how many times he got no's, right? So how many times he cried, even because I believe when you are in this entrepreneurial thing, sometimes you cried, right? So what I'm doing wrong? Why this happens to me? But they only remember he was successful and he was lucky, and it was not lucky. He put a lot of effort to do the things.
Once someone told me, let me see, that luck, LUCK, means learning under correct knowledge, something along those lines, right?
Exactly.
So it's you build the luck, right?
Yeah, but I can tell you another definition I saw from that guy too about luck, and then I will let you know. But it needs to be outside of the topic here.
I'll check if it is proper to put in the show notes and to share with our audience or not.
You tell me when I can talk and say, "Okay, you can cut this part."
That's awesome. We are coming to an end, José, and I'd like to ask you for a last question, and this is to give piece of advice to the future leaders. We are talking about young talent, and the juniors of today. These are going to be future leaders in the digital health, and not only in rare diseases space, but also in healthcare overall. So for those leading this digital transformation, what skill sets, what mindsets, what strategies are important for them? What is the message that you would give them to start thinking about? Apart from what are we forgetting about? Because that's really an awesome question.
I will give the so I'm as you know, I am a father of three kids, right? Which they will be so one of them is now going to university, and the other two will follow in the next 2 to 4 years. And what I tell to them, and this applies because of my experience and talking with a lot of people, is don't be afraid of trying. Try it. And think, what is your worst scenario? And sometimes your worst scenario is not really a worst scenario. It's only that you keep you comfortable for you to try, right? So and this is important. Try, you will fail. Go to with this mindset. Try, you will fail. If you don't fail, it's luck. Going. And if you are failing, keep going. If you trust, this is the right thing to do. So important is trying. If you're already trying, you already are giving a step in the right direction. And failure, it's normal. And there is a saying that one of the companies was applying is try, fail, but fail fast. So the thing I advise is try. Don't be afraid to try. And if you are out of your comfort zone when you're trying, then you are doing the right thing.
And you are growing, right? So
you are growing.
Since we are with exchanging quotes, that is one from Nelson Mandela that I really like and I kind of follow in my life is, I never fail, I win or I learn. And to me, that's I think it's a bit of a summary of what you're saying. It's very important. Just fail fast and try again, because then eventually you'll get there. Is that right?
Yeah. Usually, I say a similar one that is, you never lose, you win character, right? So it's always a winning, and it's always a perspective how you see or lose, right? So I never lose. I always win character. I learn. No, I want always to be in the win side. Even if I'm losing, I'm in the win side for sure.
You got knowledge. No, that's awesome and great advice for all the young talent out there. The final question: if our audience wants to reach out to you, trigger some conversations, can they find you online?
They can find me online in LinkedIn under José Videira. Yeah, so this is the only online platform I have is LinkedIn, right? I don't want to give my email because then I become afraid that I get.
You just have to. You'll have too much data to manage. So maybe you need to get some AI to sort it out.
So I will tell you one thing. This weekend I was trying to download ChatGPT to my personal computer, because I want to do some deep researches for myself on that. And one thing that happened, it was for the first time in many years, I crashed the computer. So now my computer doesn't turn on. It says fatal error. And being an IT guy, I went yesterday to the shop to fix my computer because I cannot fix anymore. No, but I'm trying. Look, I'm trying. I'm downloading tools. I'm experimenting. And I'm getting a lot of ideas. And I need to tell you, Andre, I love the conversation that we just have. And I know that we keep discussing this in and out of this group. But I will be always keen to participate or to get questions through LinkedIn to discuss this topic.
That's amazing.
I'm really passionate by this one.
Okay, no, I appreciate that. And thanks very much for taking the time to be here. Thanks very much. And with this, let's say goodbye. This was the first episode of Rare Mind Talks, a podcast where we look into AI, data and innovation into the rare diseases space, but also healthcare, as you could see. Thanks very much. We've covered a lot of topics here. There's going to be some of this information in the show notes as well. And for those that want to reach out to me, please go to theraremind.com and you'll have all the information needed to reach out. Thank you very much for listening, and I'll see you again in the next show.